Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of the CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What's on our agenda today?
Yeah, so glad to be here. It's been a news-packed few weeks since our last episode with the U.S. elections and Fed decision. But we will not be covering macro or broader market data releases this week on the podcast. We'll continue to follow national and macro news developments, but we'll spend more time on those specific implications and changes to commercial real estate on later episodes, because today we have a special episode for you. We'll be covering our newly launched quarterly report, which is the Investment and Transactions Quarterly. The report is really intended to provide insights into U.S. commercial real estate investment sales, pricing, and market activity trends. And so, Cole, why don't you share a bit about the types of metrics and some of the data that is covered in this report?
Yeah, I think this report really covers transaction volume, pricing, and pacing at the national level. And then there's some additional insights at the MSA level, which I'll get to in a little bit. But I think there are various metrics used throughout the report, but they're all derived from essentially three different primary metrics. So you have the count or the number of properties transacted, the dollar volume or value, so that's the recorded transaction price, and then square feet, so the aggregate built physical space transacted.
Great. And so this report, it is lighter on commentary, but it is very data heavy. With the massive amount of data that we have at Altus, we're really able to see trends as they emerge or existing trends and how they evolve. And this Investment and Transaction Quarterly Report is a way for us to really share that with the broader CRE marketplace. Transaction report like this, I would say, is really not earth-shatteringly new in concept. But we did try to differentiate it from other similar reports that are in the market, really to help fill some of the gaps that we on the research team noticed.
Yeah, I think you really said it yourself, but it is a little different in that I think it's more comprehensive in scope. We end up picking up a range of property sizes in the report, all commercial properties over 5,000 square feet. We also cover a range of deal sizes that others might not cover. So we start as small as $100,000 for a transaction. We also cover a very wide range of geographies. So the data comes from more than 390 different MSAs. And I think we also get more granular. In many cases, we offer data at the subtype level. And I would say lastly, it's fairly timely. This report leverages the power of the Reonomy data set here at Altus. So information comes from the tax authority level in many cases. So it captures some big transactions that may have recently closed, but have yet to be reported. These transactions are often not the ones reported in the news. These are the ones directly from tax authorities. So I'd say the bottom line is that this report, it's complementary to others that are out there. We have grouped the data by generally accepted property type definitions, perhaps those that you'd be familiar with in the NCREIF property index. So other institutional frameworks that use similar definitions. So I think that you can pair this data up with some that's already out there, but it is a fairly holistic view of the property and transaction landscape here in the U.S.
Fantastic. And before we dive into the actual report and some of the findings, I want to note that this report is open really for all to explore, whether that's interactively on our site or if you want to download it as a PDF. But Cole, can you give our listeners a high-level overview of some of the methodology that we use when preparing the report that they might want to keep top of mind?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the property and transaction level data are sourced from the Reonomy data set that we have here at Altus. So that connects both public and private property data sources. So I mentioned the tax authority sources from before. But the data in the report was actually pulled a couple weeks after the end of the quarter. So October 15th is the date that we pulled the information on. And so recorded transactions did include those through September 30th. But in addition to the properties and sale characteristics I mentioned above, or previously rather, the sale characteristics include those that are closed, final, and on the record. So we don't capture sale announcements such as those, you know, captured in the media. These are single asset sales. These do not include a portfolio or multi-asset transactions or corporate like M&A activity. And these are also not distressed transactions, so no foreclosures, tax liens, short sales. Why is this important to bring up? I think in some cases, we have used aggregate volume statistics, which required an estimate or an adjustment to account for some lagged reporting effects. So you'll see that some of the data is, quote, scaled up. So the quarter three data, I would say, should be interpreted as preliminary figures. We may revise it in future editions of the report as prior transactions populate in the data set, or we revise our estimation methods to account for some of the differences in seasonality and geographic reporting. So a couple things to keep in mind there. But yes, non-distressed single asset transactions and the volume statistics are scaled up to account for some of the populating lags in the data.
All right. And now that we have the background about the report, let's dive into the actual meat, the data. So where did we end the third quarter in terms of transaction volume?
Omar, I think the big statistic here when we talk about the aggregate national transaction activity, if you look at the change between quarter two 2024 and quarter three 2024, you saw that transaction activity declined in terms of count 10%. By dollar volume, you saw it decline 6.6%. And by square feet, you saw it decline 3.8%. Now compare this to the same year prior, and you get that quarter three 2024 transaction activity was down 9.9% by count, 9.6% by dollar volume, and 11.4% by square feet. But where it gets really interesting is if you look at some of the property type specifics. Most sectors did see pronounced quarter-on-quarter declines for the number of properties transacted. Multifamily was down 12.3%, office down 11.5%. But there was one standout sector. Hospitality actually saw the number of properties transacted increase 9.2% over the same period. When you look at square footage, the aggregate space transacted increased on a quarterly basis for hospitality by quite a bit, 27.6%. For commercial, general, and mixed use, relatively flat, but up 0.1%. And if you looked on an annual basis, you'd see that the aggregate declines were really driven by multifamily and industrial. So down 18.4% and 15.9% respectively. The aggregate value of office transactions, interestingly, did increase significantly on a quarterly basis. So up 15.5% and annually 20.8%. So some big shifts when you looked at the property sector level.
So what I'm hearing is that transaction volumes continue to slide, though generally at a decelerating pace compared to prior periods. But how did the pacing of transactions and investment look through Q3?
Yeah, so this is one of the benefits of the granular data that we have. We can actually look at the cumulative transaction volume on a daily basis. So one of the things we looked at was the cumulative transaction activity as a count year to date through the end of September. And you find that the cumulative count was actually the lowest since 2011. A cumulative dollar volume or value transacted was the lowest since 2013. And the cumulative square footage transacted was the lowest since 2010. This is not the only pacing metric we have. Another that we calculated for the report is what I'm calling an average daily transacted figure. So this shows the average count, dollar volume, and square foot of transactions on a given day during the third quarter. And these were at or below typical period during the pandemic. And they're still quite below a typical pre-pandemic period. So definitely worth taking a look at on some of those individual property type breakouts in the report. But transaction activity remains pretty muted.
Overall, still slow pacing through Q3. That aligns with the overall low dollar count and square feet volumes that you mentioned earlier. But what about pricing? Cole, what did you see in terms of transacted pricing data at the national level and across different property types?
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting. The all sector average price per square foot of a transacted property during the third quarter actually rose by 1.2% on the quarter. The average price per square foot for each of the individual sectors actually increased, with one exception, which was hospitality, which I thought was quite interesting, noting that transaction activity was quite high relative to the last quarter. Now, the average price per square foot of a transacted property did fall on the year across the board, so 1.6%. I think you'll find that a lot of this was driven by multifamily, which has seen some pretty pronounced declines since 2022. But across the major property types, the average price per square foot rose for industrial, 6.6%, for office, 3.5%, for commercial general and mixed use, 0.1%. And it fell for retail, 0.3%, and for hospitality, 0.1%. And it also fell for multifamily, 8.7%. If you combine all those, you got the yearly slight decline. But what's really interesting, and one of the other benefits of the report, is our subsector breakouts. So 10 of the 15 subsectors that we have tracked in the report saw quarter over quarter price growth on a per square foot basis. And these were led by categories such as mixed use, which saw a 7.5% increase, manufacturing, which saw a 6.3% increase, automotive, a 3.9% increase, and office or general office, 3.8%. So some really interesting stuff when you look at the subsector level.
And the report includes national aggregated data, which is an aggregation across more than 300 MSAs. But in the report, I know that we also include top 10 largest metros. And this is a section that I think will be growing out in future iterations and publications of the report by adding additional metros. But sticking with the current report, Cole, can you orient our listeners? How was this metro-specific section set up? And what could one find if they explore the report further?
Sure. So we've got two sections that I consider deep dives, and one of them covers property type specific trends, and the other are some kind of deep dives into those MSAs. So I'll call a few things out here to orient folks, but one of the things that makes the report interesting is that we can dive fairly deep. There's too much to cover in full on the podcast. I don't want to give everybody every number away. But you'll find in the report some more pricing statistics by subtype and through time. You'll also find average transaction sizes for those property types, so by built area and dollar value. And again, those average daily transaction activity metrics going back 10 years for each of the major property sectors. That MSA data is something that I really think makes this report stand out. It's got an overview of what we'll call the total universe of CRE in the 10 largest metros, covering the number of properties per sector, the square footage of property per sector, and the total appraised value. And what I think makes that really neat is that we have a comparison of the composition of recent transactions. So how the count of all properties relates to the count of transacted properties, how the square footage breakdown compares to the transacted square footage breakdown, and then how value or the total aggregated appraised value breakdown compares to that of the transacted amounts. So I think you'll find those comparisons really enlightening. There's some interesting trends for a lot of the largest metros. We have covered the top 10, so I would encourage people to check those out and get some more insight into some of those large markets that have been driving a lot of the conversation in CRE over the last few years. So I think the other component that is worth mentioning, this is on the PDF version of the report, but you'll find a map for each of those metros that includes the precise location of reported transactions within the last 6 months. I think this is a really interesting component for a couple of reasons. And one is that you get an idea where transactions are clustered. Do multifamily transactions occur more frequently in one metro than in another? The other thing that I think is interesting about it is that, putting my urban planning hat on, you get a unique perspective on how development patterns really impact some of the different transaction patterns. So you'll see a number of these metros that are not nearly as dense as others, and where those transactions are happening. Are they clustered along major highways or in other major parts of metros? I think it's definitely a unique way to take a look at some of the places that have dominated a lot of the conversation in CRE. But ultimately, I do think the beauty of this report is that there is so much data, so many metrics that folks can really make their own conclusions. We don't provide any speculative commentary on why the transactions are happening the way that they are, but we do provide a lot of just individual kind of raw statistics about what's happening, giving you a holistic view of the transaction market. So we've got some high-level stats in there, but folks are able to draw their own conclusions about what's going on in CRE, perhaps what's going to drive transaction activity to come back. And so really excited about some of the components of this report, but a lot of interesting stuff to unpack. So Omar, I've been talking a lot about what's in the report, but I do want to get a bit of your perspective. So what are a few things that you took away from the report? Are there any standouts or surprises that were in there for quarter three?
Yeah. So looking at it pretty holistically, I think it's important to take a step back and look at the macro and market environment that really surrounded the data in the report. We can see that there was really a lot happening. I think Q3 was a very exciting quarter for a number of reasons, and ultimately was being digested. A lot of that news and a lot of that change was being digested by would-be buyers or sellers and overall just CRE investors. But just for some context, right? So what happened, a few things that jumped out in terms of Q3, the Fed started to ease monetary policy, bringing the Fed funds rate down by 50 basis points. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury came down by about 55 basis points over the quarter and has since reversed. The corporate credit spreads have tightened, with AA spreads to treasuries really compressing 74 basis points. Broader, I would say, investment grade came compressed about 77 basis points during the third quarter. And on the start of U.S. easing, monetary easing cycle, overall lower rates, compressing spreads, and just improved capital environment, you saw the broader equity market post about 6%, whether you're looking at the S&P 500 or you want to take even a broader scope at the Russell 3000, and shares of REITs really outperformed the broader equity markets, delivering about 16% over the third quarter. So a lot happening on the capital market side, which that's just context that you need to put these numbers into. But another thing that happened during the third quarter, and I unfortunately don't have numbers around it, but I really think that the outlook for CRE and the media cycle around CRE started to shift. We started seeing much more positive views of CRE, whether that was calls for the bottom, many large firms, whether they were investment firms or data providers were calling the bottom, as well as just more improved outlooks for individual sectors of CRE. We did pick up on some of this shift in sentiment in our industry conditions and sentiment survey, and we have a full episode dedicated to that. So if you want the podcast version, you can listen to that or go download the report. I think one of the stats that really jumped out to me was that the near-term transaction intentions was at the highest level that we've seen in at least a year. But I think the fact that larger institutions were also signaling that they're planning on getting back into transacting is a very meaningful takeaway. So if you look at it, the markets were moving, you had a big shift in sentiment, and yet these numbers come out and very little change, or that, you know, transaction activity is still down. So I would say that might seem like a surprise, or might run a little bit contrary to the broader market context. However, I would remind folks that transaction activity is not something that turns on a dime. It takes time to really move the needle. And so even though we do see declines, the pace at which the quarterly decline is happening is really, it's slowing down, right? I think it's supported by this shifting sentiment and the overall capital environment. But I would also note that, you know, it depends on what you're comparing to. If you're just looking at relative period-on-period changes, I think I'm a little bit optimistic that we should start seeing these positive quarter-on-quarter changes relatively in the near term, or at least through the next year. But having the context that we're still about a third off of pre-pandemic levels in terms of activity, that's a much bigger gap. And I think that there still is some uncertainty around when we're going to make up for that, and which sectors are going to get back to that pre-pandemic or that level of normalcy sooner. But in terms of transactions and understanding the transaction space, I think you need three things in any transaction. You need intent, you need opportunity, and you need ability. Intent means that you like the asset class or the sector and you want exposure to it. The opportunity means that you've found a good asset that fits your thesis and you found it at the right price. And then ability is really that you have the financing or you have the means of getting that transaction done. And so while we've seen the intent really turn, and that with the sentiment of there is greater intent to transact, whether that's coming out of our industry conditions and sentiment survey, or whether that is just measured by kind of the media and or company outlooks, I think the intent has overall improved. Opportunity, meaning good assets and, you know, assets that are for sale and at the right price. I think some of the data that you just called out a few minutes ago, I think that's showing that we are seeing some of that really come through, and there's improvement on that opportunity. And then on the ability in terms of financing and getting the deal done, I think the financing environment, I think capital still costs something. It's still pretty expensive. We have seen some improvement, but I think after Q3 closed, that environment's changed again. I think overall, the financing space still is the biggest question mark for me. But I do think that the improved intent and outlooks and the improved opportunity set that is available, I think that those are solving two of the three big pieces. So we're getting there, but we're not quite there yet. So now that I've finished my ramble session, Cole, how can folks access this report?
Yeah, so I'd say there are really two different ways to find this information. First, you've got to visit the Altus website and click on resources, and then you will look for investment and transactions quarterly report. There's an online experience that'll allow you to see a variety of interactive charts of some of the data, leveraging some new capabilities on the Altus website. We've also included some interactive maps. And the report online is actually grouped into four sections that you can toggle between and see a lot of this different information just in the order that we've shared it with you today. So national transaction volume, national transaction pricing and pacing, metrics by property type, and then metrics by MSA. But you'll also be able to download the full report as a flat file or a PDF at each of those different sections. This will have limited commentary, but it'll put all the data right there in front of you. Feel free to print it out, mark it up, share it with your colleagues, give us some feedback on it. We would love all the feedback we can get. Very excited about it.
Yeah, and just to reiterate that, we're very excited about this report. It's been months in the making, but we're really happy to get it out the door and share it with you. We'll be building this report. We'll be publishing it quarterly, but we'll continue to build it out further. So if you have any feedback, please reach out and share that with us. And we think that this ultimately is a very helpful data set that we use ourselves, but we also think that you should hopefully find it helpful to your work as well. And if there's anything that you think would or that could be added that would also help, again, reach out to us. We're here and we'd love to hear that feedback.
Excellent. Omar, I think that is all the time we've got today. But before we sign off, I do want to share precisely how folks will be able to give us some feedback. So if you want to leave us a message or feedback via voice recording, we will have a link in the show notes to do that. But I'd also encourage you to rate and comment on the show the old-fashioned way on your preferred podcast platform, or the extra old-fashioned way, feel free to send us an email. We have altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you'd like on the show, or if you want to share some feedback on the report, you could do that there as well. But in the meantime, thank you everybody for joining us on another episode of CRE Exchange. We'll be back in a few weeks.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.